Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hey there, friends, and welcome to my favorite part of the afternoon, getting to spend time with you, prescribing hope for healthy families. And listen, today we have a continuation from a conversation that I had previously with Jill Garner. So many of you heard about this conversation, and we're going to talk about that today. And cultivating respect in our kids and having self-respect, not self-esteem. That's what we're going to talk about. Let me tell you about Jill. And by the way, we are on our third day broadcasting live here from the National Religious Broadcasters Convention floor. We are here with thousands of other content creators, broadcasters, journalists, all kinds of media people who are here learning and collaborating. So how can we bring the good news of Jesus Christ to you? And we are doing that today. And Jill is here. I was so thrilled when I found out she was going to be here in person. Jill Garner is an accomplished speaker. She's an advocate. She's a founder of Manners of the Heart, which is a nonprofit reawakening respect in our society for the sake of the next generation. She's the author of the award-winning Raising Respectful Children in a Disrespectful World, Raising Unselfish Children in a Self-Absorbed World, and this book right here, Manners of the Heart. And Manners of the Heart and Strong Heart is what the book we're talking about today. Strong Heart, Cultivating Humility, Respect, and Resiliency in Your Child. If you're watching the video, you will see this book has a bunch of green sticky notes that is coming out of the pages, because usually I'll put one or two and think, okay, I'll have these questions. Jill, I had a lot of questions. We did not get to all of them, so I'm so grateful that you came back. Thank you so much for that.
A delight to be here. I just love you, Jessica.
I know, we're just instant kindred spirits.
Absolutely,
right?
Absolutely.
Like, we just got along so well. It's so good. Well, let's just dive right in. For those who may have missed the last episode with you and thinking, I'm feeling a little FOMO here, like their fear of missing out, tell us a little bit about you and your ministry.
Well, I founded Manners of the Heart 22 years ago with the mission, as you've already mentioned, to bring a return of respect and civility in our society for the next generation. So everything we do is about the kids. It's about the next generation and their kids as well, because I'm a grandmother seven times over. So those grandkids are extraordinarily important to this Gigi. And so we have, through our organization, we offer elementary school curriculum for pre-K to second grade. As we know, Barna tells us that up until the age of 10, those hearts are still pliable, you know, clay, soft clay. And at 10, they begin to harden a little bit and firm up. And whatever is planted in there and engraved in those hearts is there to stay. And by 13, it's solidified. And so that's why this work that we do, we really focus in the area of the children, we really focus on the young learner. And then we have our parenting books, as you've already mentioned, and we do a lot of parent workshops and parent training. And then we also have Heartbeats, which is practical wisdom for the rhythms of life. I'll get it out. And that's a little 30-second radio spot and a 60-second spot for parents. So we try to encircle a child with all the adults in their lives.
Can you see why we're like instant friends here? I mean, anybody whose life mission is to minister to kids, like you are my people. And I appreciate so much, Jill, the work that you have done, because this is important work. Much of what you've talked about are the things that Gen Z and Gen Alpha are being criticized for, that they don't have manners, that they're disrespectful, that they don't have a good work ethic. Now, I'm speaking generally, and every generation has its struggles, for sure. Right. I mean, we've seen generations, we can just say Woodstock, right? Like, is that too controversial? But there are issues in every generation where we look back and think, okay, you know, there were good things, there were challenging things, we learned things.
Right.
And this generation is no different. And I love that you are empowering them. Well, I shared with you a little bit, Jill, before the show, that after the last time that you were on the show, we got this, and I've already warned you so that you wouldn't cry too much on the air, because it made us both cry. We got a message from a listener, and I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I'm just going to read a little excerpt. And she, this listener, this precious, precious lady, and thank you so much for writing into us. She said, "Oh, I just have to share with tears in my eyes how much the Lord taught me through your podcast yesterday. And she said, she went on to talk a little bit about her situation. And she said, the beautiful words and eloquent thoughts of Jill Garner allowed me to put words as to why we're raising our daughter the way that we do. And she went on and said, this podcast just did wonders for my soul. I've started getting back in the Word daily for the past few weeks. So let's just say God is working on me. Thank you for allowing Him to work through you. And thank you, Jill, for being such a blessing. Isn't that just, that's why we do it, right?
This is why we do it.
That's why we do it. Well, to that mama out there, you know who you are, and we just want to affirm you and let you know that we are praying for you, we are cheering for you, all the things. And really, Jill, that's one of the things that I'm doing here at the Dr. Nurse Mama Show's 52 Habits for Healthy Families and getting back in the Word, prayer, all of those things are essential building blocks. But tell us about your book, Strong Heart. We started talking about it a little bit last time, but like I said, I think we only got through like one or two of my green sticky notes. So tell us about the book.
Well, I'll give you the definition of a strong heart.
Yes, so, let's do it.
A strong heart, a child who becomes a strong heart, is morally courageous. And I don't mean a child who has faith and knows their values. I mean a strong heart is a child who is courageous in those values and is the one who will stand up. I always like to say stand up when others will sit down. That's the child who's going to speak up when others remain silent. That's the child who's going to defend the faith and to defend the right and wrong of situations. So morally courageous, that tips them over to being a strong heart, morally courageous. And how does that happen? It's because they're grounded in truth and they're also fortified with, as you know, self-respect. They are fortified with self-respect. That's what really insulates their hearts. That self-respect insulates their hearts when it's grounded in truth. And so that's really the definition of a strong heart.
Well, and listening to that definition, what parent out there would say, I don't want my kid to have that? That's exactly what we want them to have. And maybe you've never said it in those exact words before in that definition, but just putting words to, I think, the longings of our heart. Yeah. And we want our kids to be able to stand up. And that let's focus on that courage piece for a second, because I think there are a lot of kids who are afraid. And you know, that's what I see from my lens, is that there are a lot of parents who are really fearful today, and kids
Very
who
true.
Are fearful. They don't
Very
know,
true.
Should I speak up? Can I speak up? What will happen?
Right.
Will I get canceled? Will I get in trouble? Will I get kicked out of school? You know, what's going to happen? Because we see some very real repercussions for speaking up for the things that you believe in. Although on the other hand, Jill, kids do this all day, every day, all the time. They talk about what they believe in and what they feel strongly about. So how do you give a kid courage?
Well, it goes back to beginning with that instilling self-respect in their hearts. That's really where it begins, is to set them on that path towards self-respect. And interestingly enough, we really give them courage by allowing them to have difficult situations. I remember when with my own sons, they were in a Christian school, but there were some issues taking place there, and things were... there were some things shifting by some faculty members they had brought in, and one particular faculty member was really pulling things in a wrong direction. And my sons, at the beginning of school, right before they had the parent night to come meet the teachers, told the teacher that, you're probably going to be hearing from our mom. And the interesting thing, so I go to parenting night, and I introduce myself, and he said, oh, yes, you're Boyce and Chad's mom. I said, that's me. And I said, do we need to talk? And he said, for what it's worth, your boys handle things pretty well on their own. And so one of the ways, I believe, is to not be quite so quick to pull them out of tough situations or things that we question, that we're wondering, is this best for them? But rather allow them to be in the situation and then fortify them with what they need and keep those conversations open so you're the first one they come to when they have those questions and they hear things that don't add up right. But sometimes I think as Christian parents, we almost shelter a little too much sometimes, and we want to pull them out rather than taking that as an opportunity to fortify them and pour more truth into them and deeper, so that we enable them, we are equipping them, so we're not overprotecting, but we're equipping so they can stand on their own. And that's where that courage comes from.
Well, Jill, again, this is one of the reasons why our hearts are so aligned, because I agree with you wholeheartedly. And when we look at some of the parenting trends that have been happening, gatekeeping is one that comes up a lot in the Christian community. Uh-huh. And the heart behind it, the intent behind it, is admirable. It's good. We
Absolutely.
Want to protect our kids, mm-hmm. and we still should strive
Absolutely.
In every way possible to protect
Absolutely.
Our kids from negative influences. We do not Absolutely. Want them to be exposed to things that they don't need to be exposed to yet.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, you know, Jill, I think we have to face the fact that we are living in a world mm-hmm. that's saturated by screens, that has
right.
new threats coming every
right.
day.
Right.
So equipping them with the courage, saying, I want to protect you from everything. But at mm-hmm. the same time,
right.
you got to have that courage. And then mm-hmm. it plays into other parenting styles that I see that are popular now, like mm-hmm. helicopter hovering too close, yep. you know, or
right.
lawnmower, like making sure everything is perfect and manicured uh-huh. in your life as, mm-hmm. you know, everything in your life is monogrammed and personalized. And you know, some
yep.
of those things are just fun
yep.
and nice,
yep.
but it just depends on your overall philosophy. So let's
right.
talk a little bit more about that, about letting our kids, making it safe to fail.
Mm-hmm. You know, we all know as adults that that's where we learn. That's right. We learn in our failures. We don't learn if everything is always right and goes easy. You know, one of my sons, when he became an adult, who was still single, said, you know, Mom, everywhere I turn, there are granite girls. And I said,
granite girls?
Granite girls. I said, what's a granite girl? And he said, you know, Mom, they're not looking for formica. They're expecting granite, Mom. You know.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, and he said, you know, Mom, you know, look, us guys, you know, we're starting to build businesses. We're getting going, you know, Mom. But, you know, can't give them granite right off the bat. You
uh-huh.
know, Mom, we got to, you know.
That.
But a lot of that, and then, you know, as that conversation ensued, you know, they were talking about just exactly what we're talking about. You know, girls who have been raised mm-hmm. where kind of everything was taken care of, you know, and life was easy and they didn't have chores and there weren't a lot of expectations and it was, you know, do your homework and we'll take care of everything else, you know,
mm-hmm.
and they become very, I hate to say the word, soft, but they don't develop coping skills. And they actually, one of the problems with middle schoolers that you're very well aware of, when kids are not allowed to fail, to figure things out on their own, and to work through difficult situations, you know, with our guidance, but let them be a bit, you know, and work out some of the situations. When they get to middle school, they don't have any coping skills, and they're not problem solvers, you know, so they can't problem solve on their own. They have to have someone else solve their problems and fix everything for them. You know?
I completely agree. And mm-hmm. we, you know, I grew up in Gen X, and there was something good about mm-hmm. Gen X, and mm-hmm. that is that we
yeah.
are a very self-sufficient generation because we were just pretty much left to our own.
Right.
But at
That's
the
true.
Same time, we've swung the pendulum too far the other way.
Right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
we've got to have it. And the role of a parent is to mm-hmm. make it safe to fail.
Yeah.
Even from those very infancy days, we don't want to prevent our toddlers from ever falling.
Right.
We want to make it safe when they do fall. That's why we use the little bumpers on the coffee table.
And great analogy.
Use the, you know, little, like you baby-proof mm-hmm. the house, but you still mm-hmm. let them have that independent exploration.
Right.
They need it for their body, their mind, and their soul.
Right.
And it's the
right.
same when they're older.
Mm-hmm.
So I really mm-hmm. view the best parenting style. Mm-hmm. I've talked about mm-hmm. the lighthouse, you know, being an mm-hmm. immovable, fixed place of faith,
uh-huh.
but also being a coach. When they start to mm-hmm. get into this middle school
right.
age, they need a coach. And what does
right.
the coach do? They make sure it's safe to fail.
Yeah.
Because they're
yeah.
practicing and they're trying
right.
and they're
right.
they're seeing what can they
right.
do. And,
right.
and the coach says, okay, you need to rest
right.
now. Okay, we need
right.
to push harder in your training.
Right.
We need to pull back. That's what we need to do.
Right.
Well, we're already up against our first break. See, Jill,
okay.
this is why I need to talk with you a lot longer. But when we come back, I really want to dive into this concept of self-respect versus self-esteem. I read this and I thought every parent in America needs to hear this message, because so often today we're so invested in our kids' self-esteem, and it's a losing strategy.
Yes,
it is just
it
an
is.
Absolute losing strategy, because
yes.
the concept of what yourself should be is changing every day. In cancel culture, we need to teach them to respect themselves based on their identity in Christ. So
right.
we will be right back with more from Jill Garner and my sticky noted book right here. Strong Heart, Cultivating Humility, Respect, and Resiliency in Your Child. Don't go away after this break. Again, we're going to talk about self-respect versus self-esteem, and we're coming to you live from the National Religious Broadcasters Convention. We'll see you right on the other side of this break. You've heard a lot about saving babies on this show. That's because it's important to me personally. And let me just be frank with you, we need to save them. That is why we've partnered with Preborn, the nation's leader in introducing mothers with unplanned pregnancies to their babies. And once she hears that heartbeat and sees that precious life growing inside of her, she is twice as likely to choose life. Now that is a miracle. But quite honestly, if we don't save them, who will? Preborn receives no government funding, so their work is completely dependent on us. Preborn has rescued over 280,000 babies, and that's not all. They provide love, support, and counseling for up to 2 years for free, saving lives and souls. One ultrasound is just $28, or 140 helps to rescue 5 babies. Abortion doesn't stop, so we can't. Together, you and I can save lives. Just call #250 on your cell and say the keyword baby. That's 250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
Run to the Father.
Welcome back, friends. That is Run to the Father by Cody Carnes, and I'm here with my new friend Jill Garner, and we're both, I can tell, we're feeling it. Like, don't let it stop playing, because I love that song. It's such a good reminder. Hey, friend, whatever you're facing today, I just encourage you to run to the Father with it. Just drop everything and run. He is waiting for you. He is just waiting there with open arms, with comfort, with peace, with strength to meet the day. And today is a hard day to raise kids. That's what I hear from parents all over, that this is a hard time. Now, we're coming to you live from the National Religious Broadcasters Convention. So if you hear a lot of chaos around us, it's great. There are thousands of people here, and there are a lot of moving parts. And we're just going to come to you live with all of the energy of that. I'm talking to Jill Garner, and we're talking specifically about her book, Strong Heart, Cultivating Humility, Respect, and Resiliency in Your Child. I have so many sticky notes on this book. This is a message that I believe every parent needs to hear. Before the break, Jill, we were talking about the message that I give parents, saying that a lot of parents, and I'm so sorry, y'all, there is some extra noise coming through there, but we're just going to push through it. Because let me just stop for a second and say, the last time that Jill was on the show, we had more technical problems than we've ever had in any show. So Jill is bringing a powerful message that the enemy doesn't want you to hear. So I need you to tune in and to push past all of that and to listen, because this is something that you need to hear. There is all kinds of forces trying to tell us not to give you this. But before the break, Jill, we were talking about, you know, I've gotten some pushback from parents, but saying, calling it out and saying, we give kids too much too soon today. Yeah. And that's not to say that it's not wrong to bless your kids and to give them something that's over the top, to have experiences that are extravagant. But if that is their everyday daily living, it can be really hard, because then when they get to be adults, they can't sustain that level of living. And just like you talked about, there's good godly guys out there looking and wondering, how am I going to support this granite girl? Thank you, Jill, for that. But Jill, you said that people will ask you, what is your best piece of advice? And all of that, what we've talked about, and you didn't hesitate. You knew exactly what you're going to say. What's your best piece of advice?
Oh, yeah. My best piece of advice, when they get to be junior high and high school, middle school, I guess, in high school, we say now, is you've got a great kid, it's never been in trouble, and they mess up. And most all of them are going to do it. They're going to make a big mistake, do something really foolish. The worst thing you'll ever do is to get them out of trouble. The worst thing you'll ever do. And I know it's great kid, you know, and you think, oh, you know, but I know my child, and, you know, but here's the problem. If you make it easy and you back up on the consequences and you don't let the natural consequences come to bear, and then add your piece of discipline, not punishment, discipline on top of it, what happens is you're almost guaranteeing that it's going to happen again, that something is going to happen again. And here's the tough part. If you do it again, and you get them out again, you now it's absolute. There's going to be a third problem. And there's something about that three. There's something about setting a pattern in children when you get to three. And now you've set a pattern that might not be broken. And it could really, truly be the beginning of a spiral. And so that is always my deepest piece of advice is don't get them out of trouble. Let the natural consequences come to bear. Don't do anything that lightens, you know, the trouble in any way. All natural consequences. And then add a strong piece of discipline with it that's appropriate, that matches the behavior, the problem. And chances are great you won't have another problem and you'll nip it in the bud.
You know, so often I find that natural consequences are sufficient to deal with the situation along with boundary setting.
Yes.
That what could we have done better?
And
there's no judgment or shame because sometimes a lot of times we're doing the best that we can with what we know.
Right.
And then when we know more, we do better and we can look back and say, okay, what additional boundaries are needed to keep you safe? Here,
right.
To make sure that that's not there.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I think one of the things that helps them be resilient, we know the number one predictor of resilience is meaningful connection to an adult and a healthy relationship, which as parents, we have the awesome opportunity of making that us.
Right.
But another concept that I think is really important is this concept of self-esteem versus self-respect. And I'm holding up this issue of the Stand magazine, which is put out by American Family Association. And how fun, Jill, we both have an article in this month's issue. So we're here as magazine buddies, but you talk about this. So you can find the Stand online if you're not a subscriber. But talk about this self-esteem versus self-respect.
Yes. Well, the truth is self-esteem, I love to call it the grand deception. Because self-esteem truly is no different than the sin of pride in the Garden of Eden. It's no different than vainglory, which was a lot of discussion in the 1700s. The difference is that we understood the sin of pride is a really bad thing. And we got that. We understood what took place in the Garden of Eden was it changed eternity. It changed history. And vainglory was recognized as vanity, self, elevating self, terribly unappealing. But our enemy, and this is why we're having all the difficulties because he doesn't want people to hear this.
That's right.
And then our enemy reframed it and called it self-esteem. Because if you think about it for just a moment, the most clearest definition of self-esteem is the esteeming of self, right? It's that mantra that we so hear, especially as women today, love yourself, love yourself, love yourself. Well, it doesn't take but a moment to recognize if we fall in love with ourselves deeply, that makes us much less lovable, and it makes it much more difficult for us to love others if we've fallen in love with ourselves. And then the other red flag, the true red flag that we should have recognized and we missed as Christians was in the late 60s when we were told that self-esteem was going to solve all of our problems. It was going to make us kinder to one another. It was going to help in our schools. It was going to make the kids feel confident and so their grades were going to go up. If there was going to be less vitriol, less divisiveness, oh my goodness, and look what's happened. None of the promises of self-esteem held to be true. And the reason is because it was all a deception. Carl Rogers is the one, if you trace it back, that we can really hold responsible for telling all the rest of us that we need to build our children's self-esteem. And Carl Rogers was the grandfather of humanism. Should have been a red flag to Christians, and yet we fell for it. I mean, we fell for it hook, line, and sinker.
Well, when you look at self-esteem, and you're even talking about as women, I was talking yesterday with the incoming director of American Heritage Girls, who's taking over that organization from her mother. We were talking about, even talking to our daughters, how these issues you're facing with self-esteem in your teens, you face them in your 30s, in your 40s, in your 50s. There's a lot of issues that aren't there.
Yeah.
And when I look at self-esteem, I look at it in two different ways, Jill, because for one thing, if you're going to have good self-esteem, you feel like that's because I'm doing all of the right things that make me a good person. I'm, you know, I pay attention to my nutrition and I work out and I have good friends and I have all of these things that, you know, this kingdom that I've built around myself that makes me feel good about myself. That's how I build my self-esteem is by working on myself, right? We hear self-help and all of treat yourself. I mean, all of these things that are really indulgent. But the other side of that, the other side of that coin to me, Jill, is that, hey, just accept me how I am. I am just who I am, and mm-hmm. I don't have to change for anybody. Yeah. And, you know, you should just love me exactly as I am, flaws and all. And I think both of those are harmful, harmful approaches, because mm-hmm. for one thing, on the positive side, I guess if you could call it that, you know, you're never going to be fully happy. It's a fool's errand.
Right.
And on the other side, you're never going to be happy because you're not growing as a disciple in Christ. So let's talk about this difference in self-respect. How do you see that as different?
Mm-hmm. So the fundamental difference is that self-esteem is exactly what you just described, Jessica. It's self-centered, right?
Yeah.
But how do we develop, how do we get respect? How do we get respect?
We earn it.
We earn it, and we...
And we, oh my goodness, you're giving me a pop quiz that I'm failing here.
And
we give it. Oh, yes. We give it. Yes, exactly. Yes, we give it and we get it.
That's right.
Yes,
so
you're
how do we gain respect? It's by giving respect, right?
You're
and working.
Right.
I think of a wheel of respect. I'm trying to recreate a wheel of respect in our society and, you know, get it going again mm-hmm. and get it, inculcate it back into our society. And how's that going to happen? It's when we're being respectful, which I think of as showing respect to others, while at the same time we're working to be respectable, right? Mm-hmm. So we're working to earn it while we're giving it. But the interesting thing about that is if we're giving it and working to earn it, it's other-centered. It's not self-centered. It's other-centered. And the beautiful thing about this whole discussion is that when we are esteeming others and respecting others, that's where we gain respect for ourselves, right? When it's not about us, right? When it's about what do I have to give? What has God given me to contribute to the world? And when people will say, well, Jill, you know, how do kids feel good about themselves? Because this is really an upside down flip for people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how do kids feel good about themselves? Well, it's when we discover what we have been given, what God has put inside of us to contribute. It's in the contribution we make that we gain our self-worth and our value.
You know, yesterday our prescription for hope was cultivating a heart for service. And that's a lot of what mm-hmm. we talked about, just how mm-hmm. kids really do get a lot of their identity from service, from how, the way that they can serve others, because that's recognizing the ways that God has individually and uniquely gifted them to be in this world. And when they reach that full potential and they're able to serve others with the ways that God has made them and God has gifted them, that's a way to get self-respect. Let me read some of these comparisons that you've written in this magazine article, mm-hmm. the differences between self-esteem and self-respect. So self-esteem is fleeting happiness because it depends on how you feel about yourself at the moment.
Right.
Self-respect is lasting joy. Self-esteem is greedy. Self-respect is grateful. Self-esteem is arrogant, while self-respect is humility. Self-esteem is insecurity, which I see that. Anybody who says they're working on their self-esteem, they're saying, I'm insecure about myself. But self-respect is confident. Let's park there for just a minute, Jill, because mm-hmm. I know you talk about a kind of a paradox here with humble confidence. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, it's one of my favorite terms. I love putting those two words together. So humble confidence, easy definition of humble confidence is bowing at the foot of the cross and allowing Christ to raise us up. Right, which is what Scripture teaches. That's what we're to do. So if we think of this thought of humble confidence in our children, what are we looking for in our children? That is the idea that we are allowing our children and teaching our children how to acquiesce to others, how to look for how they're going to serve rather than watching for how someone's going to serve them and what's in it for me, looking at what can I do for you. And it's in, again, as I mentioned, it's in that contribution. It's in finding what they have of value to serve others. It's, my mother always said growing up, we find our happiness by making others happy,
mm-hmm.
you know. And it's in finding that they gain their confidence. And the more they do, for instance, let's frame this in respect. That's a fun way to look at it. So one of the things we teach through our program and through our curriculum, and when we work with high school kids, we really drive this point home. Every time that you are faced with disrespect and you choose to return respect, you actually gain more self-respect, right? Because every time that you're hit with disrespect and you choose rather than return disrespect, which is what our nature wants us to do, that's what our flesh says to do, and that's what the tempter is telling us to do, hit them back, right? But when you choose instead to return respect, you're doing two things. One is you're saying, I see into your heart. I recognize that the disrespect you're showing me is coming from a troubled place in your heart. I don't want to give more back to you because that's only going to hurt you, and it's not going to enable us to have any kind of relationship or to gain anything from this. It's only going to further deteriorate the situation, right? And it's a way of showing respect to that other person as a child of God, regardless of their behavior. We're going to choose to show respect. And every time a child is able to do that, they gain more respect for themselves.
And you know, I think just for parents out there listening who are thinking, well, I want my kids to have good self-esteem. Is that bad? And I think it's better. I think this is a better way to look at it. Yeah. Is self-respect. It's more achievable. Yeah. It's more attainable. Yeah. And having and doing that, teaching respect for others, yeah. You know, it does. It helps you have respect for yourself, because when you can walk away and you know that I had self-control. Uh-huh. And I think, you know, Jill, this is mm-hmm. why it's really important for us to praise our kids' character traits as much as we praise their accomplishments.
Absolutely.
So often they're at a sports game and we'll say, hey, you know, you scored that goal, or, mm-hmm. you know, hey, you made this grade. Right. Hey, you won this prize.
Right.
It's not natural for us to say, hey, you really showed self-control yeah. when that mm-hmm. ref made that call. That was yeah. really unfair. Mm-hmm. You chose self-control when, mm-hmm. you know, your teammate
right.
didn't,
right.
or when the call right. didn't go right. your way, or you chose patience, or right. you chose kindness. I think if mm-hmm. we praise those things, mm-hmm. then when those come and when they're shown disrespect right. and they realize that they right. not only did not return it with disrespect, right. say words that they regret, have actions that mm-hmm. they're embarrassed about, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, Jill, I have kids in sports. I have seen mm-hmm. high school kids like throw their helmet in the dugout. Like,
oh.
just throw a... And I remember oh, yeah. my daughter once, when she was about mm-hmm. 7, she looked and saw one of the coaches throwing a fit and said, well, that looks like a big baby fit, you know? Yes, that... I thought, okay, don't say that too loud. But, you know, but yes, you're saying what we're
true.
All thinking. So
yeah.
I think
yeah.
having and affirming those character traits that they show,
yeah.
think, I can be kind yeah. even yeah. when I'm disrespected. I can yeah. be considerate.
And well, I love, Jessica, I love yeah. the thought of saying to encourage rather than praise. I love the thought of saying to encourage those character traits, you know, to encourage. Because every time we encourage them, you know, and when they've shown those wonderful qualities, uh-huh. it just reinstills, it just drives it kind of deeper into their soul.
It absolutely yeah. does. And other things, self-serving uh-huh. versus self-giving, unsatisfied yeah. versus content, giving up versus being persistent, fearful versus brave. All of these things are so admirable. And you can read more about them in Jill Garner's book, Strong Heart, Cultivating Humility, Respect, and Resiliency in Your Child. And we'll be talking about this more. We'll see you in just a minute.
We live in a day when America's families are under attack like never before.
Buddy Smith, Senior Vice President of the American Family Association.
The war against biblical principles rages on numerous fronts. The internet, Hollywood, Washington, D.C., America's corporate boardrooms, and the list goes on. At American Family Association, we're committed to standing against the enemies of God, the enemies of your family. And we recognize it's an impossible task without God's favor and your partnership. Thank you for being faithful to pray for this ministry, to give financially, and to respond to our calls for activism. What you do on the home front is crucial to what we do on the battlefront. We praise God for your faithfulness, and may He give us many victories in the battles ahead as we work together to restore our nation's biblical foundations.
Your power, the cross is your defeat.
Jesus is your healer. He's got it covered. I know there's so many of you who are facing so many things today. I am right there with you. I am. I'm praying for you. And know that God knows. He sees and He cares deeply. Listen, we're coming to you live from the convention floor of the National Religious Broadcasters. You're going to hear a lot of happy chaos here in the background, but don't let that distract you. Now, you know, I'm here with Jill Garner, author of Strong Heart, Cultivating Humility, Respect, and Resiliency in Your Child. And Jill, I'm going to bet that the best listeners today are going to be the moms who are staying at home with kids who have chaos all the time. And they're going to say, this just sounds like my house. Like,
that's
yes,
right.
We have all kinds of things going on. But there is a lot of energy here, and we're so delighted to be coming to you here live. We're talking about this concept of self-esteem versus self-respect. Now, I am going to tell you that it's really hard for us as parents. How do we define this in a way that's congruent with our faith? And I am convinced that really trying to pour into self-esteem is just something that is destined to fail. And Jill has provided us an alternative in looking at how do we build our kids' self-respect. All of us want our kids to have lasting joy, to be grateful, to be humble, to be confident, assured, content, and to persist, to be brave, to be selfless, to be authentic, and other-centered. And Jill, I'm reading from your article in The Stand here, where you said, self-respect enables children to stand against temptations and embrace the good, the right, and the holy things of God. Self-respect empowers children to speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves. It cultivates in them a desire to fulfill God's purposes. And when children are raised with self-respect, they see beyond themselves and seek after God's purpose for their lives. They reflect Jesus' image to the world, seeking to serve rather than to be served. And this is how they have a strong heart. And all of us want our kids to have strong hearts in today's world. One of the concepts that you talk about, Jill, is a new term that you coined called persuasive parenting. And in light of all of the parenting styles that we've talked about, lawnmower, helicopter, bulldozer, gatekeeper, gentle parenting, all of those things. Yeah. What is persuasive parenting?
Yeah. Persuasive parenting. Well, I believe this is really truly a biblical concept. You know, in persuasive parenting, it's kind of really two sides to it, I guess. In persuasive parenting, this kind of goes back to the modeling, right? If we are striving to be the person that we want our children to become, right? Never can do it perfectly. We're all going to make mistakes. There's plenty of grace. There has to be lots of grace in any home to go around, right? But if we are striving to be the person that we want our child to become, we're going to model and we're going to show our children what that looks like. They're going to see in us, you know, what it looks like and understand what we're asking of them and requiring of them. They're going to see in us. It really makes our job much easier if we work at that ourselves. And so that's one aspect of this persuasive parenting. We persuade simply by the way in which, you know, we live our lives and the choices that we make. And then when we're directly working with our children in persuasive parenting, I love to think of the heart on the cover.
Yes,
is the idea of that was kind of like it looks like stone and it's kind of like a ruby. And so the color of ruby. And rubies are very, very hard to mine. They're much harder to mine from the earth than diamonds. And it takes a tremendous amount of heat and pressure to take that ruby and then to mold it and shape it into the beautiful stone that we know rubies to be. That's persuasive parenting. It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of heat, so to speak, which by heat I simply mean molding and shaping our children. And that's really what I mean by persuasive parenting. It involves discipline rather than punishment. One of the things I love to say is that if we discipline our children, we're actually helping them avoid the punishment of the world.
That's a good way to say it.
If we discipline our children, we get caught up in punishment. What we're doing, that's not persuasive parenting. When we want to punish our children, we really, the attitude behind it is we're wanting to make them feel rotten that they made a mistake. Well, we miss the whole aspect and the whole training aspect of discipline, because when we discipline our children rather than punish them, we are giving them an action that changes the inappropriate behavior. And when all we do is punish and make them feel rotten for what they did, we've missed the whole opportunity to train and give them the alternative for what that looks like. So if they've messed up and they made a mistake, the old thing with young children, you know, give your sister a hug. You know, you hit her, so rather than hit, we're supposed to hug, you know. But that's really, as they grow, it's the same thing. We show them the right behavior to replace the wrong behavior, and that's totally lost in punishment. And that's persuasive parenting, when we use discipline rather than punishment to train them and mold them and shape them into who we want them to become.
I can hear myself saying, we use our voices, not our hands. We use our voices, not our hands. But, you know, you make a really good point and between the two. And what I see is that punishment is really shaming.
Yes.
But discipline is shaping.
Yes.
And there's a big difference there. So when we punish, we're just piling shame on top of shame.
That's
because
everybody
feels bad when they make mistakes. And we're all going to make mistakes. We're all imperfect. But discipline is shaping them. How do we set up the boundaries? And again, it's going back to look and see, how can I make this safe to fail? And a question that I often ask my teenagers when they experience some sort of setback, some sort of failure, some sort of anything, I say, what can I do? What do you need from me to give you the support that you need to make better decisions in the future? What is the support that you need? And it's been interesting, Jill, because they'll tell me something that I didn't even think of. They're like, I need the boundaries to be stricter. I need, you know, this to be tighter. I need you to answer your phone every time I call. I need to make sure that, you know, whatever you can do or whatever it is, you know, they may surprise you in looking at that. But I think that when we're also, what you're talking about being persuasive, when we're walking the walk, you know, when not just talking the talk, that's what they're looking for. And it is very attractive when we know healthy coping mechanisms, when we know how to self-regulate. If we have a bad day and then we come home and we're throwing stuff around and getting dinner ready and we're in a bad mood and everybody knows, oh, go hide in the room. Mom's in a bad mood, you know, like it's been a bad day. That's not very persuasive. But when we come home and say, you know what, I had a hard day. I need 5 minutes that I can just go and reset. Let me go change my clothes. Let me go just have a minute, and then I'm going to come back and I'm going to be ready for you. Those kinds of things are what build the relationships that we need so that we can speak into their life, don't you think?
And oh, so much so, Jessica. And you know, I'll add another layer on top of this whole idea of persuasive parenting, and it's being the same person at home that we are in public. You know, it's being real. One of the pieces that I talk a lot about is the school of respect. And when they get to middle school age, which is really that age of accountability, spiritually, emotionally, any way we look at it, we frame it, they're looking at us and we better be real. It's very important that we're real, because they're making their decisions, 12, 13, of, you know, are they really going to take on the faith? Are they really going to believe what we've been teaching them? And to make, and when we're not real and we're someone else out there, or, you know, the we hang up the phone and we begin to talk about the person that we just hung up the phone with, you know.
I've never done that, Jill.
Oh, me either. Oh,
never.
Me either. Oh, no. And,
Oh, that's so convicting.
You know, but when we, you know, say one thing, we do another. When we really, you know, show two sides, you know, that are not congruent. It's really damaging to our children, because they need to see, you know, that we're real. Again, we're going to make mistakes. And of course, while we're talking about making mistakes, when we make a mistake, the first thing we should do is turn around and say, I am so sorry. you know what?
I messed up.
I messed this up big time, and I am so sorry. And I'll be on my knees tonight talking to God about it. And in this moment, I want to look at you and say, I'm sorry. I want you to know, you know, Mom just messed up. Shouldn't have done what I just did, you know. And it's so powerful to admit to our children, you know, and apologize when we do mess up. It's a very powerful thing to do.
You know, I remember one time when I was a young mom and I drove a minivan, of course, because what young mom with four kids doesn't.
My kids
actually called it the van car, which, you know, I don't know where that came from.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah, it was the van, but it was not a car, you know. Anyway, I had a minivan and my patience was tried. You know, we were going somewhere and there was crying and there was, you know, all kinds of chaos and everything. Yeah. And I lost my temper and I spoke, you know, in a way that I don't want to speak. I just spoke harshly. And it wasn't, you know, you look back at it and I think, okay, if anybody else was in the car, they may not even have thought about it, but it was not what I wanted to do. And Jill, I felt so badly about it. I pulled over into a parking lot, you know, where it was safe. Mm-hmm. And I got out of the car and I opened the van door and it was sliding open. And I will never forget the look on my kid's face. And I just said, I am so sorry. I should not have spoken to you that way. It's really important. And it, for me to stop and to make sure that you can see my eyes and know that I am sorry. Will you please? Oh, I was going to make me cry. Will you please forgive me?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Okay. I didn't expect to get all emotional, Jill. But I saw these little chubby toddler arms, you know, just reach out and give me a hug and say, it's okay, Mama. Yeah. Because the thing is, our kids are often so much more forgiving of us than we are of ourselves, don't you think?
You know, they want us to get it right.
Yeah.
You know, they want us to. They need us to. But they want us to. And they forgive so quickly. They forgive so quickly when they see our hearts. And you said something so beautiful, Jessica. You did it with your eyes.
Yes.
It is so critically important that we connect with our children, that we listen with our eyes. We listen. Obviously, we listen with our ears. But often, we don't listen with our hearts, and we don't listen with our eyes. Mm-hmm. And that is so important. If you want to connect with your children, get on their eye level and connect with their eyes when you're speaking to them, and especially when they're speaking to you, rather than continue with what you're doing, you know, and saying, yes, oh, I hear, No, stop what you're doing and look at them in their eyes, because when you do that, you really are connecting with their hearts.
You absolutely are, and you're connecting with their mind. This is what I love about science, and here's where I get into be a science nerd, and I've shared this several times before, but when we make eye contact with our kids for at least 20 seconds, their brain releases oxytocin, which is the same hormone that's released, you know, when a mother's nursing a baby. It's a bonding chemical. And I think, what grace of the Lord to give us that built-in biological advantage if we just look them in the eyes, He's going to automatically turn their thoughts toward us. He's going to turn their attitude and intention and soften that. And I think that's just such a grace of the Lord.
I agree.
And being with our kids. So if you could, I know it's really hard, but if you could just give a takeaway message, parents are listening thinking, I want my kid to have a strong heart, you know, and some of these things you've talked about, we're doing that really well. And some things, we got some work to do. How would you give them a closing message?
I think what I would say is to give your children, if you really want to help them develop a strong heart, from the earliest age, I'm talking 2 years of age, frame what you ask of them as how it affects others. Because if you can turn their hearts and shape that worldview we talk so much about into being other-centered, looking toward, you know, showing respect to others. And here's something that's hard and beautiful, too. We are the first face of God to our children. We're the first face of Jesus to our children. And when we work at being respectful, as we keep talking, and gaining their respect and earning their respect in the choices that we're making, and helping them, and we ourselves are other-centered, and helping them to be other-centered in their actions, we are really setting them up and setting their hearts toward gaining respect for God and respect for authority, respect for others. And when we go to the Ruby Rule, I call it, which is the golden rule, we know, treat others the way we want to be treated. Let's respect others the way we want to be respected.
Jill, thank you so much. This has been so encouraging to me. If you want to catch the first show that Jill was on, it was January 29th. So scroll back through the podcast and find it. And remember, our prescription today is champion respect for yourself and for others. Champion respect for your kids. And if you want to know more about that, you can get Jill's book, Strong Heart, Cultivating Humility, Respect, and Resiliency in Your Child. Or you can pick up your copy of The Stand magazine. Listen, wherever you are, may the Lord bless you and keep you and make His face shine upon you. May He be gracious to you and give you peace in the middle of chaos. Tomorrow is Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday and all things sleep hygiene. Don't miss it.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.